Blog Talk Radio.
Presence of the Lord is here. Presence of the Lord is here. I feel it in the atmosphere. Presence of the Lord is here. Oh, presence of the Lord is here. Spirit of the Lord is here. Anybody feel it tonight? Spirit of the Lord is here. I feel it in the atmosphere. Spirit of the Lord is here. Oh, Spirit of the Lord is here. The power of the Lord is here. The power of the Lord is here. I feel it in the atmosphere. The power of the Lord is here. The power of the Lord is here.
This is Ken Hodge, one of the producers of Hodge the Hodge podcast. And tonight we have our premiere show called The Messenger. Again, The Messenger is a prophetic word from God given to us from Messenger Ron Dyer. Every once in a while, we have a person who comes through. And when I say comes through, I mean during our life. During our lifetime, that teaches and ministers to us about the goodness of God, about basically how easy it is to secure what you have already secured, which is your place in eternity. Again, not only is the messenger here to educate and unite this world we live in, he's also my direct brother. And so without further ado, everybody, hear ye, Messenger Ron Dyer.
Bless you, my brother. Bless you. It's a beautiful thing to have you. Love you. We also like to thank Sister Nurse Carmen for joining us tonight as well.
Hello.
Tonight, we're going to be discussing just some of the things that we spoke about earlier with regards to the be, do, and have and our creative process and the things that we have to understand to get this thing moving. And you know, most people believe that if they have a thing, such as more money, more time, more love, whatever, then they can finally do a thing, write a book, take up a hobby, go on vacation, buy a home, undertake a relationship, which will allow them to be a thing happy, peaceful, content, or in love. And actually, in actuality, they are the reverse. I'm sorry, what we're doing is reversing the be, do, have. In the universe as it really is, as opposed to how you think it is, havingness does not produce beingness, but the other way around. Let me just say that one more time. Havingness does not produce beingness, but it's the other way around. First, you be the thing called happy or knowing or wise or compassionate or whatever. Then you start doing things from this place of beingness. And soon you discover that what you are doing winds up bringing you the thing you've always wanted to have. The way to set this creative process, and that's what this is, the process of creation, into motion, is to look at what it is that you want to be. Let me just put you on hold just one second. I'm sorry. Okay, I do apologize. The way to set this creative process into motion, it is to look at what it is you want to be, have. Ask yourself what you think you would be if you had that. Then you go straight to being. And this way, you reverse the way you've been using the be, do, have, and actuality sets it right and work with rather than against the creative power of the universe. Here is a short way of stating this principle. In life, you do not have to do anything. It's all a question of what you are being. This is one of the three messages that I've touched on throughout this conversation that we're having. For now, and to illustrate this, think of a person who just knows that if he could only have a little more time, a little more money, or a little more love, he'd be truly happy. He does not get the connection between his not being very happy right now and his not having the time, money, or love he wants. That's right. On the other hand, the person who is being happy seems to have enough time to do everything that's really important, all the money that's needed, and enough love to last a lifetime. He finds he has everything he needs to be happy by being happy to begin with. Deciding ahead of time what you choose to be produces that in your experience. To be or not to be? That is the question. Happiness is a state of mind. And like all states of mind, it reproduces itself in physical form. That's a statement of a refrigerator magnet. All states of mind reproduces themselves. So we should get us a magnet and put it on our refrigerator just to remind us. All states of mind reproduce themselves. But how can you be happy to begin with? Or be anything you are seeking to be, more prosperous, for instance, or more loved, if you are not having what you think you need in order to be that? Act as if you are, and you will draw it to you. What you act as if you are, you become. So basically we're saying, in other words, fake it until you make it. It's something like that, only you can't really be faking. Your actions have to be sincere. Everything you do, do out of sincerity, or the benefit of the action is lost. This is not because God won't reward you. God does not reward or punish, as you know. But natural law requires the mind, body, and spirit to be united in thought, word, and action for the process of creation to work. You cannot fool your mind. If you are insincere, your mind knows it, and that's that. You've just ended any chance that your mind can help you in the creative process. You can, of course, create without your mind. It's just a great deal more difficult. You can ask your body to do something your mind doesn't believe. And if your body does it long enough, your mind will begin to let go of its former thoughts about that and create a new thought. Once you have a new thought about a thing, you're well on your way to creating it as a permanent aspect of your being rather than something you're just acting out. This is doing things the hard way, and even in such instances, the actions must be sincere. Unlike what you can do with people, you cannot manipulate the universe. So here we have a very delicate balance. The body does something in which the mind does not believe yet. The mind must add the ingredients of sincerity to the body's action for it to work. How can the mind, you ask, how can the mind add sincerity when it does not believe in what the body is doing? By taking out the selfish element of personal gain. The mind may not be able to sincerely agree that the actions of the body can bring you what you choose, but the mind seems very clear that God will bring good things through you to another. Therefore, whatever you choose for yourself, give to another. I'll say that one more time. Whatever you choose for yourself, give to another. If you choose to be happy, if you choose to be happy, cause another to be happy. If you choose to be prosperous, cause another to be prosperous. If you choose more love in your life, cause another to have more love in theirs. Do this sincerely, not because you seek personal gain, but because you really want the other person to have that. And all the things you give away will come to you. Why is that so? How does that work? The very act of your giving something away causes you to experience that you have it to give away. Since you cannot give away another something you do not have, your mind comes to a new conclusion, a new thought about you, namely that you must have this or you could not be giving it away. The new thought then becomes your experience. You start being that. And once you start being a thing, you've engaged the gears of the most powerful creation machine in the universe, your divine self. I'm going to say that again because that's really important for us. The new thought then becomes your experience. You start being that. And once you start being a thing, you've engaged the gears of the most powerful creative machine in the universe. And that creative machine in the universe is yourself. Whatever you are being, you are creating. The circle is complete. And you will create more and more of that in your life. It will be manifested in your physical experience. Why sincerity is so important to give to another what you choose for yourself? If you give to another contrived or manipulated, meant to get something to come to you. If you give to another as a trick or manipulation to get something to come to you, your mind knows this. You've just given it a signal that you do not now have this. And since the universe is nothing but a big copying machine, reproducing your thoughts in physical form, that will be your experience. That is, you will continue experience not having it, no matter what you do. Furthermore, that will be the experience of the person to whom you're trying to give it. They will see that you are merely seeking to get something, that you have nothing really to offer, and your giving will be an empty gesture, seems for all the self-serving shallowness from which it springs. The very thing you sought to attract, you will thus push away. Yet when you give something to another with purity of the heart, because you see that they want it, need it, and should have it, then you discover that you have it to give away, and that is a grand discovery. This is true. It really works this way. I remember once when things were going not too good, I've given stuff away and how it have come back and just been, I mean, when I was down to my last and I gave out of sincerity and honestly not looking to get anything back, but just to be able to help someone. And when I did that, I never went lacking. Because it's about the sincerity of the heart. And that is also applicable in tithe giving and things to that nature. You can give $10 million, but if it isn't out of sincerity, you're just giving. You're just giving. It's got to be sincerity. And you cannot fool the heart, the mind. You can't fool it. What I'm proposing, you see, is that you already have. I'm sorry. What I'm proposing is that you already have the answers to that question. Right now, you are living the thought that you do not have the answer, that if you had the answer, you would have wisdom. So you come to God for wisdom. Yet I say to you, be wisdom, and you will have it. And what is the fastest way to wisdom? Cause another to be wise. Do you choose to have the answer to this question? Give the answer to another. So now I'll ask you the question. I'll pretend, okay, that I don't know and you give me the answer. How can the parent who pulls a child out of traffic be truly loving the child if love means that you want for the other what they want for themselves?
Say that again.
Okay. How can the parent who pulls a child out of traffic be truly loving the child if love means that you want for the others what they want for themselves? Because okay. Well, 'cause I'll say the parent did want for the child what the child wanted, which was to stay alive. I say that the child did not want to die, but simply did not know that wandering around in traffic would cause that. So that in running out there to get the child, the parent wasn't depriving the child of the opportunity to exercise its will at all, but simply getting in touch with the child's true choice, its deepest desires. And this is the same with God. God, then, as God should be doing nothing but stopping us from hurting ourselves, for it can be our deepest desire to damage to ourselves. Yet we do damage to ourselves all the time, and God just sits around and watches us. God is always in touch with your deepest desires and always gives you that. Even when you do something that could cause you to die, if that is your deepest desire, that is what you get, the experience of dying. You got to understand that God never, ever interferes with your deepest desires. And you got to remember this, you cannot do damage to yourself. We are incapable of being damaged. Damage is a subjective reaction, not an objective phenomenon. You can choose to experience damage to yourselves out of any encounter or phenomenon, but that is entirely your decision. Given the truth The answer to your question is, when you have damaged yourself, it is because you wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm speaking on a very high esoteric level here, and that is not really where the question is coming from. The sense that you mean, it is a matter of conscious choice. I would say that, no, every time you do something that damages yourself, it is not because you wanted to. The child who gets hit by a car because he wanted it in the street, did not want to, desire seek it, to get hit by the car. The man who keeps marrying the same kind of woman who is all wrong for him, packaged in different forms, did not want, seek, constantly choose to keep creating bad marriages. The person who hits the thumb with a hammer could not be said to have wanted the experience. It was not desired, sought, consciously chosen. Yet all objective phenomena is drawn to you subconsciously. All events are created by you unconsciously. Every person, place, or thing in your life was drawn to you by you, was self-created. If you will, to provide you with the exact and perfect condition, the perfect opportunity to experience what you next wish to experience as you go about the business of evolving. Nothing can happen. I'll say it again. Nothing can happen to you. Nothing can occur in your life which is not a precise, perfect opportunity for you to heal something, create something, or experience something that you wish to heal, create, or experience in order to be who you really are. And who really am I? Whomever you choose to be, whatever aspect of divinity you wish to be, that's who you are. That can change at any given moment. Indeed, it often does, from moment to moment. Yet, if you want your life to settle down, to stop bringing you such a wide variety of experiences, there's a way to do that. Simply stop changing your mind so often about who you are and who you choose to be. Stop changing your mind. If you decide you want to be... excuse me, if you decide you want to be the best songwriter, then what is it you need to do? You need to stay focused on writing songs. And if you look at some of the greatest people, LeBron James, just using him as an example, LeBron knew from the time he was in the sixth or seventh grade, he wanted to be a great basketball player. He didn't change his mind. He focused on playing basketball, and look what he achieved.
Amen.
That's what we have to do. We have to remember to stop changing our mind and stay focused on what it is that who we are and who it is we choose to be. And what God sees is that you are making these decisions at many different levels. The child who decides to go out in the street to play in traffic is not making a choice to die. She may be making a number of other choices, but dying is not one of them. The mother knows that. The problem here is not that the child has chosen to die, but that the child has made choices that could lead to more than one outcome, including her dying. The fact is not clear to her. It is unknown to her. It is the missing data which stops the child from making a clear choice, a better choice. So you see, you have analyzed it perfectly. Now, as God will never interfere with your choices, but he will always know what they are. Therefore, you may assume that if a thing happens to you, it is perfect that it did so, for nothing escapes perfection in God's world. The design of your life, the people, places, events in it, have all been perfectly created by the perfect creator for perfection itself. You and God is as and through you. Now, you can work together in this co-creative process consciously or unconsciously. You can move through life aware or unaware. You can walk your path asleep or awake. You choose. If all you desire is what your soul desires, everything would be simple. If you listen to the part of you, which is pure spirit, all of your decisions would be easy. And all the outcome joyous. That is because the choice of the spirits are always the highest choice. Now, at that, on this note, what I'm going to do is I'm going to the part of our message where we get a song in. And then once we're through with the song, then I will come back. Actually, I got to get a water break. Okay. Okay, we thank you, and I'm back. Let's go back to that comment I made about decisions at different levels. You say that if you want life to settle down, that we should stop changing our minds about who we are and who we wish to be. Then, when I said that, not easy, I made the observation that all of us are making our choices at many different levels. So you ask, what does that mean? What are the implications? If all you desire is that your soul is what your soul desires, everything will be very simple. If you listen to the part of you that is pure spirit, all of your decisions would be easy. All of the outcomes joyous. That is because the choice of spirits are always the highest choice. They don't need to be second-guessed. They don't need to be analyzed or evaluated. They simply need to be followed, act on. Yet, you are not only a spirit. You are a triune being made up of body, mind, and spirit. That is both the glory and the wonder of us. For we often make decisions and choices at all three levels simultaneously, and they by no means always coincide. It is not uncommon for your body to want one thing while your mind seeks another and your spirit desires yet a third. This can be easily true of children who are often not yet mature enough to make distinctions between what sounds like fun to the body and what makes sense to the mind, much less what resonates with the soul. So the child waddles into the street. Now, as God, he is aware of all your choices, even those you make subconsciously. But God will never interfere with them, but rather just the opposite. It is God's job to ensure that your choices are granted. In truth, you grant them to yourselves, which I've said, done in and puts a system into place that allows you to do that. The system is called the process of creation. When you choose conflict, when your choices conflict, when body, mind, and spirit are not acting as one, the process of creation works at all levels, producing mixed results. if, on the other hand, you being in harmony with your choices are unified, astonishing things can happen. Young people have a phrase, having it all together, which could be used to describe this unifying state of being. There are also levels within levels in your decision making. This is particularly true at the level of the mind. Your mind can and does make decisions and choices from one of at least three interior levels: logic, intuition, and emotion, and sometimes from all three, producing the potential for even more inner conflict within one of those levels. Emotion, there are five more levels. These are the five natural emotions: grief, anger, envy, fear, and love. And within these also, there are two final levels: love and fear. The five natural emotions include love and fear, yet love and fear are the basis of all emotions. The other three of the five natural emotions are outgrowth of these two. Ultimately, all thoughts are sponsored by love or fear. This is the great polarity. This is the primal duality. Everything ultimately breaks down to one of these. All thoughts, ideas, concepts, understandings, decisions, choices, and actions are based in one of these. And in the end, there is really only one. And that one is love. In truth, love is all there is. Even fear is an outgrowth of love, and when used effectively, expresses love. In its highest form, yes. Everything expresses love when the expression is in its highest form. Does the parent who saved the child from being killed in traffic express fear or love?
Love. Both.
Both, exactly. And so here we see that fear in its highest form becomes love. Mm-hmm. Is love expressed as fear?
Yes.
Similarity, moving up the scale of natural emotions, grief, anger, and envy are all some form of fear, which in turn is some form of love. One thing leads to another. The problem comes in when any of the five natural emotions become distorted. Then they become congested and not recognizable at all as outgrowth of love, much less as God, which is about absolute love. I've heard of the five natural emotions before from my wonderful, wonderful brother talking to me about them. So, well, I was getting ready to talk about my brother, but he left me, but okay, so I'm going to move on. Grief is a natural emotion. It's that part of you which allows you to say goodbye when you don't want to say goodbye, to express, push out, propel. The sadness within you at the experience of any kind of loss. It could be the loss of a loved one or the loss of a contact lens. When you are allowed to express your grief, you get rid of it. Children who are allowed to be sad when they are sad feels very healthy about sadness when they are adults, and therefore usually move through their sadness very quickly. Children who are told they don't cry, have a hard time crying as adults. After all, they've been told all their lives not to do that. So they repress their grief. Grief is a continual repress, becomes chronic depression, a very unnatural emotion. People have killed because of chronic depression. Wars have started. Nations have fallen. Anger is a natural emotion. It is the tool you have which allows you to say no. No, thank you. It does not have to be abusive, and it never has to be damaging to another. When children are allowed to express their anger, they being a very healthy attitude about it to their adult years, and therefore usually moves through their anger very quickly. Children who are made to feel that anger is not okay, that it is wrong to express it, and in fact that they shouldn't even experience, will have a difficult time appropriately dealing with their anger as adult. Anger that is continually repressed becomes rage, a very unnatural emotion. People have killed because of rage. Wars have started. Envy is a natural emotion. It is the emotion that makes a five-year-old wish he could reach the doorknob the way his sister can, or ride the bike. Envy is the natural emotion that makes you want to do it again, to try harder, to continue striving until you succeed. It is very healthy to be envious, very natural. When children are allowed to express their envy, they bring a very healthy attitude about it to their adult lives, and therefore usually moves through their envy very quickly. Children who are made to feel that envy is not okay, that it is wrong to express it, and in fact they shouldn't even experience it, will have a difficult time appropriately dealing with their envy as adults. Envy that is continually repressed becomes jealous, a very unnatural emotion. And of course, people have killed because of jealousy. Wars have started and nations have fallen. Fear is a natural emotion. All babies are born with only two fears, the fear of falling and the fear of loud noises. All other fears are learned responses, brought to the child by its environment, taught to the child by its parents. The purpose of natural fear is to build a bit of caution. Caution is a tool that keeps the body alive. It is an outgrowth of love of self. Children who are not made to fear feel that fear is not okay, that it is wrong to express it, and in fact they shouldn't even experience, will have a difficult time appropriately dealing with their fears as adults. Fear that is continually repressed becomes a very unnatural emotion. Love is a natural emotion. When it is allowed to express and receive by a child normally and naturally without limitation or conditions and inhibitance or embarrassment, it does not require anything more. For the joy of love expressed and received in this way is significant unto itself. Yet love which has been conditioned, limited, warped by rules and regulations, rituals and restrictions, controlled, manipulated, and withheld becomes unnatural. Children who are made to feel that their natural love is not okay, that it is wrong to express it, and in fact that they shouldn't even experience, will have a difficult time appropriately dealing with love as adults. And so it is that natural emotions, when repressed, produces unnatural reactions and responses. And most natural emotions are repressed in most people. Yet these are your friends. They are your gifts. These are your divine tools to which to craft your experience. You are given these tools at birth. They are to help you negotiate life. Why are these emotions repressed in most people? They have been taught to repress them. They have been told to. And you say, by who? By their parents, those who raised them. Well, why would they do that? Because they were taught by their parents, and their parents who told them by theirs. So what is going on here? What is going on is that you have the wrong people doing the parenting. So you say, what do I mean? Who are the wrong people? The mothers and fathers. The mothers and fathers are the wrong people to raise the children. When the parents are young, yes, in most cases, the fact it's a miracle that so many of them do as good as they do. No one is more ill-equipped to raise children than young parents. And no one knows this, by the way, better than young parents. Most parents come to the job of parenting with very little life experience. They're hardly finished being parented themselves. They're still looking for answers, still searching for clues. They haven't even discovered themselves yet, and they're trying to guide and nurture and discover in others even more vulnerable than they. They haven't even defined themselves, and they're thrust into the act of defining others. They are still trying to get over how badly they have been misdefined by their parents. They haven't even yet discovered who they are, and they're trying to tell you who you are. And the pressure is so great for them to get it right, yet they can't even get their own lives right yet. So they get the whole thing wrong, their lives and the lives of their children. If they're lucky, the damage to the children won't be too great. The offspring will overcome it, but not probably before passing some on to their offsprings. Most of us gain the wisdom, the patience, the understanding, and the love to be wonderful parents after your parenting years are over. So you say, why is this? I don't understand. You see, observation is in many cases correct, but why is this? Because young child makers were never intended to be child raisers. Your child raising years should really begin when they are now over. Okay, you say you're a little lost there, right? Human beings are biologically capable of creating children while they are children themselves, which it may surprise most of you to know they are for 40 or 50 years.
Mm.
For a certain perspective, yes. I know this is difficult to hold as truth, but look around you. Perhaps the behavior of your race might help prove what I'm saying. The difficulty is that in your society, in today's society, we are said to be all grown up and ready for the world at 21. Add to this the fact that many of us were raised by mothers and fathers who were not much older than 21 themselves when they began raising us. And you can begin to see the problem. If child bearers were meant to be child raisers, child bearing would not have been made possible until you were 50. Child bearing was meant to be an activity of the young, whose bodies were well developed and strong. Child raising was meant to be an activity for the elders whose minds are well developed and strong. In our society, we have insisted on making child bearing responsibilities for child raising, with the results that we've made not only the process of parenting very difficult, but distorted many of the energy surrounding the sexual act as well as. Now, I'm not going to get back into the sexual acts, but we've had that discussion.
Okay.
Right. Many humans have observed what I've observed here, namely that a good many humans, perhaps most, are not truly capable of raising children when they are capable of having them. However, having discovered this, humans have put in place exactly the wrong solution. rather than allow younger humans to enjoy sex, and if it produces children, have the elders raise them. You tell your young humans not to engage in sex till they are ready to take on the responsibility of raising children. You have made it wrong for them to have sexual experiences before that time, and thus have created a taboo around what was intended to be one of life's most joyous celebrations. Of course, this is taboo to which offsprings will pay little attention, and for good reason. It is entirely unnatural to obey. It is entirely unnatural to obey. We all remember at our younger age how our parents tried to stop us from doing some things, and we just didn't pay them no attention because it's unnatural. It is unnatural to obey. Human beings desire to couple, copulate as soon as they feel the inner signal, which says they are ready. This is human nature. Yet, their thoughts about their own nature would have more to do with what you as parents have told them about what they are feeling inside. Your children look to you to tell them what life is all about. So when they have their first urge to peek at each other, to play innocent with each other, to explore each other's differences, they will look to you for signals about this. In this part of the human nature, good. It is bad. It is approved of. It is to be stifled, held back, discouraged. It is observed that what many parents have told their offsprings about this part of their human nature has had its origin in all manners of things, what they were told, what their religion says, what their society thinks, everything except the natural order of things. In the natural order of your mankind, sexuality is budding at everywhere from age 9 to age 14. From age 15 onward, it is very much present and expressed in most human beings, thus being a race against time, with children stampeding towards the fullest release of their own joyful sexual energy, and parents stampeding to stop them. Parents have needed all the assistance and all the alliance they could find in this struggle, since, as they have been noted, they are asking their offsprings to not do something that is every bit a part of their nature. So adults have invented all manner of cultures, religions, societies, and economic pressures, restrictions, and limitations to justify their unnatural demands on their offspring. Children have thus grown to accept that their own sexuality is unnatural. How can anything that is natural be so shamed, so always stopped, so controlled, held at bay, restrained, bridled, and denied? What do you think is the impact on a 4 or 5 year old child when parents won't even use the correct name for certain parts of their body parts? What are you telling the child about your level of comfort with that and what you think there should be? Well, we just use those words, as Granny would say, is just that wee-wee or your bottom sounds better. Only because you have so much negative baggage attached to the actual names of these body parts that you can barely use the word in ordinary conversation. At the youngest age, of course, children don't know why parents feel this way, but merely are left with the impression, the often indelible impression, that certain body parts are not okay and that anything having to do with them is embarrassing, if not wrong. As children grow older and move into their teens, they may come to realize that this is not true. Mom and Dad have been telling us some stuff that's just not true. But then they are told in very clear form about the connection between pregnancy and sexuality. and about how they will have to raise the children they create. And so they now have another reason, feeling that sexual expression is wrong and the circle is completed. What this has caused is our society is confusion and not a little havoc, which is always the result of fooling around with nature. You have created sexual embarrassment, repressions, and shame, which has led to sexual inhibition, dysfunction, and violence. You will, as a society, always be inhibited about that over which you are embarrassed. Always be dysfunctional with behaviors with which has been repressed, and always act out violently in protest of being made to feel ashamed about that over which you know in your heart you should never have felt ashamed at all.
Amen.
So what we're saying here is something that we kind of... Sister Carmen got that amen going strong on that. But what we've done, and this is just letting us know how, once again, we're making sexuality a bad thing. And it is natural. This is a gift from God in his creation, sexuality. But we've brought the children up teaching them that it's wrong. Now, we can't blame the parents and stuff only because they didn't know any better. And society has also led us to believe that it is wrong. But once again, we keep following behind what it is that other people are telling us, and this is how we're living our lives. This is how we're defining who we are and who we want to be by what it is that other people are telling us.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've got to break that mold in letting other people define who we are. We have to begin to learn how to listen to our soul and let our soul lead us and guide us. And if we can do this, then we can be able to show the world, this is who I am. Like it or not, but this is who I am. And we can't base who we are upon who it is that somebody wants us to be. Because if we're doing that, we're not being who we are, we're being who they want us to be. And one more of our psychiatrists have ventured as much. The human being is angry because it knows it should feel no shame over something that feels so good, and yet it does feel shame and guilt. First, the humans become angry with self for feeling so good about something, which is supposed to be so obviously bad. Then, when they finally realize they've been duped, their sexuality is supposed to be a wonderful, honorable, glorious part of the human experience, they become angry with others, parents for repressing them, religions for shaming them, members of the opposite sex for daring them, the whole society for controlling them. Finally, they become angry with themselves for allowing all of this to inhibit them. Much of this repressed anger has been channeled into the construction of distorted and misguided moral values in society in which we now live. A society which glorifies and honors with monuments, statues, commemorative stamps, films, pictures, TV programs, some of the world's ugliest acts of violence, but hides, or worse yet, cheapens some of the world's most beautiful acts of love. And all of this has emerged from a single thought, that those who bear children bear also the sole responsibility of raising them.
Mm.
The whole community, with special emphasis on the elders. This is their job. And instead, what we do when they get old and have all of this valuable knowledge to help us with, what do? We send them off to nursing homes.
Mm.
We tell them that they're no good anymore. When they're in their years to be able to give guidance, we don't want to listen to them. And so what we've got to do is we've got to change our complete mindset. At one of our lessons, we talked about being out of our mind. And we've got to be out of our mind to let go of a lot of this stereotype, a lot of these things that people have told us, when we just use the gift that God has given us. I've always told you, there is nothing that we don't know. Mm-hmm. We know everything because of who we are. What we need to do is remember. We don't have to learn anything. We just need to remember, because we are a part of God. God is the creator of all things. So everything that has been created, we know about it. Everything that has been done and said, we know about it. We just have to be able to call it back to our remembrance.
Amen.
Okay, so what I'm going to do on that one, because I really want to go into, and this is probably going to be for Wednesday night. Thursday night.
Thursday
night, yes. I want to go into talk about how and what it is that was, how Satan came to be such a great deceiver or whatever it is. So we want to talk about Satan on Thursday night. So that's what our lesson is going to be about then. So at this time, I see that co-producer Brother Hodge is back on the air with us. Is there anything, my brother? I know you're working hard, and I appreciate you finding the time to drop in with us. Is there anything that you'd like to say before we get ready? Brother Hodge, you with us? Listen, Sister Carmen, well, you go ahead. Well, because we are getting close to the time that we will end this podcast. So would you like to have anything to say, and from what we've spoke about or anything?
That's very interesting that you say that we when we were made to, when we bear our children, we're not ready to raise our children, and that
right.
We should look to the elders for wisdom. Very interesting.
Uh-huh.
When I had my son at 30, I thought I had a little bit of that wisdom already. However, I thank God that my mom was around. I still had my mom, my dad, my parents to help me raise my son. It takes a village to raise
uh-huh.
a baby.
Right.
So I was very thankful for that.
Right. And that's something that we have to be mindful of, because of the fact that we've been told, and it's kind of like a stigma that they put on us. If you have a child, you're going to raise that child. You know what I mean? At 17.
Right.
And so they make it worse than what it is. But those are the years that we should be having the children, because that's when the body is stronger and able to do these things. And as time goes on, the body becomes a little weaker, and the body isn't those years. You know, you women always talk about the clock ticking. And so it is part of the body's way of shutting down that part of life. And we've got to understand that sexuality isn't just a reproduction thing.
Hey, amen, brother. Can you hear me now?
Now we can hear you now. Bless you, my brother.
All right. Yeah, we got about 60 seconds left. I apologize for cutting in. But again, I enjoyed the message. I'm working while still listening to the message. It's an honor
amen.
And a privilege to have somebody to give us a different perspective on everyday life. And as the blessing you always say, it's so easy that a fool can't mess it up. We make
That's
it
right.
hard. So, again, let's continue to spread the word about the Messenger podcast. And, again, I think if you listen, you can't stop listening.
Right.
You know, once education without application is just a waste of time. And I appreciate you for taking your time. Again, doing what God has anointed you to do, and let's try to keep this world informed that we're already where we need to be, but let's learn some life lessons while we're here walking amongst the living. Our time is expired, and again, I look forward to Thursday night, brothers. And good night.
Bless you,
Mama. Good
night. Love you guys.
Good night. Bless you. Bye. That was for you, brother. All right.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, sir.